week's reading from the book of Hebrews, and you did a really good job. I didn't mean to choose a whole chapter for you, Dylan, but the reason that I had him read the whole thing is because it's really been called the Great Faith Chapter. Beginning with a definition of faith, the author of the book of Hebrews cites a long list of examples of great faithfulness from Abraham on throughout Israel's long history. Among those singled out and their faithfulness kind of raised up, there are both the expected people and the unexpected. We have Abraham and Noah and Jacob and Joseph and Moses are all obvious choices. But as this list of the faithful continues, some surprising individuals are selected as good examples. The first one to be praised for their faith are the Hebrews who, as they fled from the Pharaoh's pursuing army, followed Moses right into the Red Sea. Despite the fact that the lack of faith of that same group of people will cost them 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. The author chooses to highlight their one united exhibition of faith, their plunge into the waters of the sea. According to this author, it was because of their faith that the fleeing Hebrews crossed safely on dry land. And it was because of the Egyptians' lack of faith that resulted in their defeat. Then the next example cited skips 40 years, selecting an event that occurred after they had entered into Canaan. At Jericho, a remarkable victory resulted from the faith of Joshua, who received and trusted a set of seemingly bizarre instructions from the Lord. And the faith of the people who obediently followed those instructions to the letter. But even before the walls of Jericho were shouted down, that city had been the site of a very surprising act of great faithfulness. The author praises Rahab, the prostitute, who harbored Joshua's spies and then helped him to escape over the doomed city's walls. In return for this act, which was based on her absolute faith in the power of God to give victory into the hands of the Israelites, Rahab and her family were spared. Now, in the lesson, we next move on to examples from the early years in Canaan when the judges and the prophets, not the kings, led the people. In this next part, the author cites six individuals whose actions were motivated by faith. Yet while each of these individuals stand tall in Israel's history of conquests and triumphs, each also had their own personal missteps. It is their moments of faithfulness, not their moments of failure, that the Hebrew author remembers and praises. But you know, as good as all these outcomes of faithfulness had been, the author of Hebrews reminds his readers of sometimes the ultimate cost that true faith must pay. Faithfulness doesn't ensure a worldly life of luxury by any means. It's remaining faithful in the face of being destitute or persecuted or tormented that this author praises. Finally, the author shows those faithful men and women of the past as a continuing, all-enveloping cloud of witnesses. The ever-present long history of faith hovers over every new generation of the faithful. They're always available to act as guideposts and gateways on every faith journey, just as the cloud guided the Israelites through the wilderness by day. I read a story the other day that Apple had to issue a warning recently to customers who were using their GPS National Park hiking app on their iPhones because they were warned about some serious glitches. In several national parks, the identified trailheads and mileages and directional guides were all completely off. Several hikers got seriously lost because they trusted these downloaded trail information that was wrong. Those hikers had faith in the electronic guidance of their hiking app, but that faith was rewarded with a wandering in the wilderness experience. If truth be told, we don't take much on faith anymore. Or do we? Let's be more precise, I guess. We don't take much on faith anymore, at least from human sources. Any politician or government bureaucrat, anything they say is immediately suspicious and suspect. Network media and government warnings and recommendations of professionals like doctors and lawyers and financial advisors and tarot card readers these days, we take them all with a grain of salt. But as that emergency Apple warning revealed, we do sometimes place faith in our electronics. We have more faith in artificial intelligence these days than human intelligence. We input all of our most private information, our personal stuff, our financial stuff, medical, emotional, and we trust that somehow it's safely stored away out there. We routinely hit send, secure in our faith that our message will go quickly to its appointed destination without interception or invasion. We trust our family trips to a GPS screen and a computer-generated voice that tells us where to go. What would you do today if your GPS, as you left church this morning, instructed you to drive your car around downtown Wauwatosa 7 times, honking the horn all the way? Well, what if your GPS insisted this was the only way to reach your desired destination? Would you have faith and follow those directions? I kind of doubt it. But in today's lesson, it is that degree of faith that the author holds up as part of that great cloud of witnesses. At Jericho, Joshua got those bizarre-sounding instructions from God. He and the people were to stomp around the city 7 times while blowing horns and then culminate the march by gathering their voices together in one big shout-out. This was the divine answer to toppling the walled fortress city of Jericho. Well, Joshua and the Israelites had lived a hard life at this point. 40 years wandering in the wilderness, generations of slavery in Egypt. They knew it took a fight to defeat the might. Yet they responded. And they obeyed those weird words out of faith in the God who had delivered them from slavery and delivered them and promised them a future. Faith in God. In the ancient world, this was an even more astonishing idea than it is today. The ancient gods, you see, were an unpredictable bunch, sometimes finding favor with individual humans, sometimes purposefully setting them up for failure. Albert Einstein famously declared that God did not play dice with the universe. But for Zeus and his bunch, it was a non-stop Las Vegas on Olympus. They played dice with everyone. Reading an anthology of the antics and the actions of the Greco-Roman gods is like reading a bad teenage novel. The gods, like their human counterparts, are simply backbiting, secretly scheming, ultimately betraying, and completely untrustworthy. The ancient Greco-Roman gods were wholly unfaithful to the human population that supposedly governed. In those days, it was utter foolishness to have faith in those gods. It was the very essence of wisdom to fear those gods. The sacred and the singular relationship between Yahweh, the Creator God, and those who honored God changed that notion of the little g God forever. Today's lesson that Dylan read is a long list of those who chose to have faith in God's promises and God's presence. And this list is just the smallest slice of a history of real relationships between people of faith and a faithful God. Through the history of Israel, humanity slowly learned that God was faithful, that God was deserving of our faith in victory and in defeat, in triumph and through tortures. God's presence never faltered. And human faith had an unfailing anchor. Living a life by faith opens up doors to amazing possibilities. A by faith life gives you an attitude of yes instead of no. A by faith life opens one up to receptiveness instead of defensiveness. A by faith life addresses challenges and real hardships with a spirit of why not, and moves forward instead of bewailing why me and collapsing in defeat. The examples of faithfulness given in today's lesson are all over the map. Those specifically named experience true triumphs and affirmations because of their faith. But they also fell flat with their failures. Samson and David both fell flat. Gideon and Barak backpedaled before going into battle. Jephthah sacrificed his daughter to honor his own words, not God's. Samuel succumbed to political pressures, and Saul paid the ultimate price. You see, a life of faith is not a perfectly lived life. But it is a life that knows how to reset itself when things go off track. Faithfulness is not a state of being, but a state of becoming. Faithfulness is an ever ongoing process of reset and reboot. Now, I'm no technological whiz, but I do okay in getting around in the electronic world. And I have to admit, it has taken some time for me to get used to that whole idea of, you know, the cloud out there. Now, the book of Hebrews was written 2,000 years ago, and in it, the author writes about the ongoing power and presence of that great cloud of witnesses who helped define and defend the faithfulness in our lives. We don't live in the past. We live out of the past. And the voice and the value of that cloud of witnesses ought to shape us and ought to steer us. How many of you today, I wonder, have entrusted by faith all of your most important, sensitive, personal information to the cloud? How many of you regularly back up all your files, all your financial information, all your doodled and noodled thoughts and dreams and schemes to the cloud every day? But I guess the reason that I'm here today is to tell you that the electronic cloud that saves all of our digital life is really nothing compared to the spiritual cloud that gives a firm foundation to our faithfulness. The great Charles Wesley, founder of the Methodist faith, wrote, "E'en now by faith we join our hands with those that went before and greet the blood besprinkled bands on thy eternal shore." Theologian Reuben Alves put the difference between faith and hope like this. He said, "Hope is hearing the melody of the future, but faith is dancing to that melody here and now." Will you dance to the future this morning? Will you live by faith and not by sight? Will you trust God with all you are? Will you lean on the cloud? Amen.